This is the United States Eventing Association's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford, and on this week's episode, we continue our previews for this year's Rio Olympic Games by talking to Will Connell, who is the Director of Sport at the US Equestrian Federation. He'll be joining me a little bit later on in the program to explain the logistics around getting the teams to Rio. But first, we're going to hear from Alec Lacour from England, who is the technical delegate for the Rio Olympic Games. He was the manager of equestrian events at the London Olympics, as well as officiating and organising several equestrian events around the world. Welcome to the programme, Alex. First time we've spoken on this podcast.
It is indeed. Thank you very much for having me on.
Well, let's do a little bit of background before we start talking about your responsibilities for Rio, because you come from a background of having evented yourself, but then got into event management and organisation. You've done a little bit of everything around the sport now, haven't you? And you're fresh from London, of course, where you were the eventing manager. So some of our elite riders will be familiar with you, especially if they've competed in England. But how would you summarise your career so far? Is it possible to look in the rearview mirror and give us a 100,000 feet view?
Goodness. I enjoyed competing very much, and I sort of fell into the organisation a little bit by virtue of the fact that we started organising an event at the yard where I live now, at Burnham Market. And I enjoyed riding. I competed up to 4-star a few times, and I probably just didn't have enough good horsepower, like a lot of people. I'm not saying that I would ever have been as good as William or Andrew Nicholson or, you know, Buck or any of these guys, but I probably lacked a little bit of horsepower. But, you know, you gave it a go. But I realized fairly early on that if I wasn't going to make it, that I needed to do something else because I love the sport. And so I became an official. I joined the British Eventing Technical Advisor ranks and worked my way up through that. And then 4 or 5 years later, I became an FEI TD. And organizationally, I started, my parents have always organized horse trials, and we've had a family horse trials at Burghey since 1977. So I've sort of grown up in that environment. And my brother, as you know, in America now runs various events, or certainly Chat Hills, and he was never ever going to run an event, but he seems to be running quite a few now too. So
he does indeed, for those who are not
somewhere
familiar,
it's in the DNA.
Yes,
yeah, Hugh, my brother, yes.
Definitely in the DNA for sure, and you know, getting as far as the gig for London Olympic Games eventing manager would probably be one of the highlights of your career. So getting Rio as well as a TD, that must be obviously a new challenge for you. How do you face that prospect? I mean, does it up your game? Do you get ambitious when it comes to the big ones?
Absolutely, I think you do. I mean, London was absolutely amazing, and I would never tire of talking about it, or tire now of admitting that it was a success. It's very British to sort of play it down all the time, and it took me quite some time to sort of acknowledge the fact that it was great, and not great because I had anything to do with it, but great because it was an amazing team and an amazing venue and an amazing city, and it just all came off. And I think that from that, you're able to see what's involved with it. So, yes, do I get ambitious from having run that? Absolutely. And you want to make Rio as good as possible as well. And you bring forward to other championships. I mean, we ran the European Eventing Championships here at Blair Castle last year. And you want it almost to be bigger and better than London, which is mildly unreasonable considering budgets and locations and all sorts of things were very, very different. But yes, absolutely. You take quite a lot of things out of each of these different experiences and you try to build on them going forwards.
When did you know that you had got the job of TD for Rio, Alec?
I found out I was asked in about September 2014.
Right, so that obviously is a big honour to get the big ones like Rio, like any Olympic Games, and you were involved, of course, with the World Equestrian Games in Normandy. But talk about the preparation then. How often you have to go to Rio before the event itself?
I've been, as we sit here at the beginning of June 2016, I've been five times already, including for 10 days at the test event last August. So I went just after I had been appointed. I went in January, and then June 2015, and then the test event, and then I went over in November 2015, and then in February 2016, and then I'm going again in a fortnight's time to meet with the Willis brothers and Tyson Frementer and Levy Rookvaerts, who are all on the Willis brother team. And Pierre Michelet set the course out. So they will have all the jumps there, and I will walk around with James and Willis and Pierre Michelet and set all the jumps out on the cross-country course. So sort of you go probably quite a lot more than you would if you were just going to a regular event. And indeed, it's a championship of that nature. Is the TD role is slightly expanded as well, because you have to look in on all sorts of the different, what they call functional areas. So whether it be accreditation, whether it be catering, whether it be transport, we get very involved with broadcast. So, excuse me, I went to Madrid a few weeks ago to the Olympic Broadcast Service, OBS, and discussed, you know, TV camera positions and those sorts of things with them over there, Pierre and I and Catherine Norinder. So it's a much more involved role than being the TD at a normal event.
Yes, as you said, so many moving parts to this, and it just gives us an idea, really, of all the areas that you're responsible for as TD. It's quite extensive. It extends well beyond the cross-country course itself, doesn't it?
It does, and I think that the experience from being on the other side of the fence, if you like, being on the organising team in London, gives you a much better insight into that. And I hope that I'm able to help Ataida Pereira, who's the equestrian manager there, and Alex Titan, who's the eventing manager. I hope I'm able to help them and help them sort of fight the battles that they need to win the war, if you see what I mean, of the big organisations, and also keep focused on what is important. I mean, everything's important, but some things are more important than others. And you know, you've just got to find the right keys to the right door. And I hope that the experience that I gained in London, I'm able to bring something to them in their team in Rio.
Of course, every culture is different, Alec, and that would be the first thing for you, I'm sure, to immerse yourself in when you see a new venue like this. Had you had any familiarity with Rio? Had you been to the Pan Ams at all and seen that venue or indeed Brazil before you got this job?
No, I hadn't. I had never been to South America, and I speak absolutely no Portuguese, and I'd never drunk a caipirinha. My knowledge of certainly of equestrianism in Brazil was relatively limited, and of the country only what one learns in a geography book at school, really, and from television screens. But it's a Deodoro. One of the first things that I was very pleasantly surprised to read when I was appointed was that the equestrianism in Deodoro was not out on a limb on its own. 45 minutes out of the city centre, it was the second biggest sports hub in the Olympic Games, because there are 9 sports in Deodoro. So although we are 40 minutes out of town, we are 40 minutes out of town with 8 other sports. So we've got, there's a hub there, you know, we've got we've got rugby just across the road, we've got hockey just down the road, you've got modern pentathlon, and you've got canoe slalom, you've got mountain bike, you've got shooting, you've got, I think, Mod Pen, you know, there's other sports there. So it'll be quite an exciting place. And I was really pleased when I heard that, because I think that that helps build the atmosphere in any Olympic venue.
Yes, hopefully. There'll be some overspill, right, between the...
Hopefully there will be, yeah, absolutely. And there'll also, hopefully, there'll be some common domain, you know, where people go and enjoy each other's sports, whether you're actually in their venue or not. You can go and enjoy meeting other sports fans from around the world, and which was one of the main things of London. I think there were so many fan zones and common domains that you were able to really get involved, even if you didn't have a ticket to go to the events. And the other thing about Diodoro is it's a really lovely place. I mean, it's actually a military town, but the venue is a lovely place. It's got beautiful rolling countryside. It's got lovely palm trees. The course now is this lovely green meandering snake, much like we ended up having in Greenwich, thankfully, you know, that meanders its way through the countryside. And the topography is varied. You know, it's not flat and boring, and it's not mountainous. It's surrounded by beautiful hills, but it's got sort of rolling, undulating topography. In Britain, I would compare it to Burley, really. You know, you're up and down, and you've got there's lots of different features to be able to play with.
So when you first saw the venue, what were the biggest challenges you realized you had to overcome in terms of the facilities there, the location, and the local resources, Alec? Did you have to look at all of those things and you know, start your own shopping list?
Well, I didn't really have to start a shopping list because these guys, there's a huge team involved in any organization of the Olympic Games. At Aida, who's the equestrian manager, he was the assistant TD in London. So he'd been there. He'd been the TD at the Pan Ams last year. He was my assistant TD at WEG in Normandy as well. So he's in a very experienced equestrian person. So he understands what's involved. He was also happened to be the commanding officer of the venue at Diodoro at the time. And he's subsequently relinquished that role to concentrate on the Olympic Games. But he was a commanding officer, so he knew the venue very, very well. And they had held the Pan Am Games before that. I think one of the challenges that they faced was that was the realization, not necessarily amongst those guys, but some other people possibly, is that the Pan Am Games is not the Olympic Games, and that the Olympic Games is a whole different ball game, kettle of fish altogether. It's much, much bigger, and everybody knows about the Olympic Games when realistically only those in Pan American countries know about the Pan Am Games, much like a lot of people in America wouldn't know about the European Championships. Of the various different sports. So I think that was one of their biggest challenges. The challenges that I found when I got there, or the things that concerned me, was just the amount that they had to do, and you know, were things like transport systems going to work, and all those sort of well-documented issues. But I am confident now that a year and a half later that they will.
So moving forward then, now we've got a few weeks to go. You're going back again shortly. What sort of things do you leave, if you will, to the last minute? Do you have like a countdown of what you need to do, a checklist then, Alec, going forward to the start of the competition, to T-minus that first horse going on the first day of dressage?
First day of dressage, yes. I think that the things that I will go over there, and the major thing that I'm going to do this next visit for 3 or 4 days is spend a couple of days setting the course out with Pierre and James, or they'll have largely have set it out already, but we'll walk it and we'll make sure that we're all happy with it. And then, yeah, there's a checklist of things. I mean, making comparisons, which is very dangerous, and London wasn't Beijing, neither is Rio going to be London. One of the benefits we had in London was in equestrian sport, we had such strength and depth for our volunteers and our officials. Now, we also made it a key requirement that we got officials and volunteers from around the world, but we still had a huge depth of knowledge internally in the UK. Now, Brazil have a massive enthusiasm, and they have some knowledge, but they obviously don't run anything like as many events as we run in the UK or America or Australasia or Germany or France, for that matter. So there's quite a number of volunteers coming from overseas. So one of my key concerns, or my key objectives at the next visit, is to make sure that when all of the national technical officials arrive, of which there are several from America, several from Europe, several from Britain, Australia, and when they all arrive, that we can manage the training of the sports-specific volunteers, so the fence judges, really effectively.
Yeah, I can imagine that's a big task, really, to get them up to speed very quickly. What other things would you be addressing, and what can we expect, you know, of the landscape there and the local culture, if anyone's thinking of going down there? Give us a sense of what they can look forward to, Alec.
Well, it is a beautiful place. I mean, we've all seen Rio on the television, and, you know, Christ the Redeemer must be one of the most familiar landmarks in the world, I should think, with the Big Ben and the Opera House in Sydney, and, you know, various others, the Empire State Building and things like that. So it's a beautiful place. It's very mountainous. There's a very friendly culture. You know, there's been lots of well documented and real issues over there recently, financially, politically, so on and so forth. I mean, I don't think that should stop people from going. We've had the Zika virus. Let's not skirt around that issue. That one's been in the press as well. I'm not a doctor, but I'm not worried about going, and I'm not worried about my members of my family coming. I think that it's like all things in life. If you're sensible, you will be fine. You can read scare stories about anything if you want to. And the Zika is something that has been sort of blown up by some people and then underplayed by others. So I'm confident that if everybody comes and is sensible, there's absolutely no reason why you should contract something like that. And I don't think many of the athletes are honestly really worrying about it. I think the athletes have spent years and years and years trying to get to an Olympic Games, and they're not going to let a mosquito stop them from going there to try and win their medal.
Now, and as Tyson Remeter said on a recent episode, that you're not too far from the beach either. He liked that idea, near one of the most famous beaches in the world. And there was more mosquitoes in Ocala, Florida, that he was worried about.
Yeah, well, I don't remember being bitten on the 5 times that I've been there so far. And yes, I mean, Copacabana Beach is an amazing place. Just to go and walk along Copacabana Beach, and if you're fortunate enough to go into the Palace Hotel or something and have a caipirinha, then you've sort of lived a bit of the Brazilian dream, I think. It's a beautiful place. It's diverse in its architecture. It's a lot of old European colonial buildings, and there's some very modern buildings. And Baja, the area where the athletes' village is, and many of the sports out that way, is a very sort of modern, up-and-coming, thriving area where you've got the old town, which is much more colonial style, and it's a beautiful place. I mean, I genuinely would urge people to go and not be put off by what they might read.
Well, it all sounds like it's going to be, obviously, a really interesting event, not least of all because it's in South America and somewhere that a lot of people are not used to going to. So I'm sure you're enjoying the whole preparation. It's always a big challenge doing an Olympic Games. But what have you found most satisfying about this one? What have you really enjoyed particularly about Rio, Alec?
I think it's always fun going to somewhere where you believe that you can... not me personally, but the sport can leave an impression and a legacy. You know, it was always amazing in London when people came into Greenwich Park, and there was, I remember the day the cross country fences, people who weren't even interested in equestrianism were clamoring to come and have a look, or clamoring to come to Greenwich. It was one of the venues that everybody wanted to come and see. And I genuinely believe that in South America, the sport will benefit greatly from having this exposure, and I think that they'll see something visually that they haven't seen before. And I know that when I go to the office, in the Rio 2016 headquarter offices, there's the same sort of feeling towards equestrianism, and actually specifically eventing. There's so much talk about the cross-country course and what the fences are going to be like and how's the water jump coming along and all of those sorts of things. So I think it's very rewarding when you feel that we're going to sort of leave a mark of our sport in a new place of the world. And it sounds very sort of romantic to say it like that, but I genuinely believe that. I think it's great. And if they can push on from there and they can use the facilities afterwards and you know, develop a few more riders. They're going to have a team. They're going to have quite a good team. There's quite a number of, there's half a dozen or more riders who very, very adequately ride at 3 and 4 star level now. And you never know what home turf does to people. You know, hopefully they'll have a really good show and really instill some confidence in their teams going forward.
And be inspired. And of course, they'll have a well-trained team of volunteers as part of the legacy.
Yes, absolutely. Well, there's a very high number of Brazilians involved in the sport, all sports over there, as you would expect. And we've got some really great guys from all over the world as national technical officials, international technical officials, going out there to train, absolutely. And we had a great test event. You know, we created there was a very good team spirit. It was hard work, but you can't be put off by hard work. And everybody worked really hard, and I think they had a real sense of satisfaction at the end of it. And this obviously is going to be on a scale many, many times different to that even of the test event. But, you know, you come out of the test event feeling confident. They believe that they've got the knowledge, which they do, and now we've just got to help them develop that.
Wonderful. Well, I'm sure another high point in your career, Alec. Thanks very much indeed for coming on the program and telling us about Rio, and the very best of luck. I hope you continue to enjoy it and have a wonderful event.
Many thanks indeed.
Will Connell joins me now. He's Director of Sport for the US Equestrian Federation, based in Gladstone, New Jersey, where he's managing the entire operation for Rio and shipping the horses and everyone down there. Will, welcome to the program.
Hi, good day, Chris.
Well, it is a major operation, of course, any Olympic Games. This will be your first representing the US team at an Olympic Games. So let's talk about a little bit of backstory to start off with, about how far in advance you would go down there to do a reconnaissance on an Olympic Games venue.
Well, I actually did my first visit to Rio as part of the British team back in 2011. And I actually went there with John McEwen, who worked with the programs in Britain and is chair of the FEI veterinary committee. And we visited Rio and we visited Brasilia and just tried to start the whole ball rolling. So really 4 to 5 years before an Olympic Games, the process starts. Obviously, that's very dependent on where the games are. In London, we were involved, obviously, from the British side, right from pre-bid. So, yeah, it's certainly something you start a long, long way in advance.
Now, when you're going down to a South American country, of course, each country is different. Their requirements for quarantine and so on, it's all very, very different. You have to take each one as they come, I'm sure. But what are the first things, Will, that you're looking for when you do that recce of a venue that you've not seen before?
Well, funnily enough, often the venue isn't so much the concern initially, because in this day and age, you can pretty much put a sporting venue, and I'd included that, include equestrian in that. You can pretty much put it anywhere with the right budget and the right lead-in time. So really my first visit, I'm looking to meet key people and build communication channels with them. I'm trying to get a feel for the layout of the whole Olympic Games and the way everything fits together, i.e. where the village is, where other venues are. Accommodation and transport is always very high on the list, because even if we have people staying in the Olympic village, there's always a bunch of people that can't stay in the village, like horse owners or additional staff. So accommodation, transport, getting to meet people, getting a feel for where the venue is in terms of the bigger picture. And trying to find people who live and work in that city who we can work with so that we've got a foot on the ground. So we've been working with the same company in Rio since, I met them in 2011, and I've been working with them ever since. And the same for Hong Kong. We work with people in the build-up to that and in Athens. So it's really about getting a feel for things and the overall layout, but starting to pin down accommodation early is very important, because it does get booked up. And Rio had the issue that they were short of accommodation. They're still short of accommodation. And so trying to secure some accommodation was a big challenge.
Your responsibilities then will clearly go beyond the horses. They're for humans as well. How far does that extend when you're putting all these pieces of the puzzle together? How many are on your personnel that you're responsible for, the team, obviously, and any ancillary help that you have as well? Give us an overview, if you would, of all your responsibilities towards an Olympic event.
Well, I like to describe what Christy Baxter and I do, and Christy works alongside me and has an eye for all the detail. I think really I would describe our role primarily as an umbrella, and our job is to really catch all the nuisance and the detail and the admin and the annoyance factors and protect the staff and the athletes and the grooms that will deliver the performances on the field of play. So a little bit like it's like an umbrella to catch all the shit before it hits the ground. And I guess in terms of the number of people, well, we'll have 12 competing athletes and three reserves and 15 horses in Rio for the Olympic Games. So that's immediately 15 riders or athletes, it's 15 grooms. We've got about 15 to 20 staff in various guises, and then, of course, all the horse owners. So it's usually around the sort of 60 to 80 people that we're trying to help and look after to varying degrees. I mean, obviously, for the athletes, we will do everything for them and the grooms. Some of the horse owners book their own flights and book their own accommodation. So, yeah, it's quite a tail to the 12 horses that will actually perform in the three Olympic disciplines that we're trying to help. And obviously with somewhere like Rio, it's very different to London. In London, you know, a lot of Americans visit London on a regular basis. It was very easy to move around London. Accommodation was relatively easy to find. Rio is a more challenging environment. We, as I said earlier, we're finding accommodation is difficult to come by. And obviously there is the security aspect and the transport is more difficult. So I guess the environment of Rio means that we need to be able to offer, along with the United States Olympic Committee, who are extremely experienced and very helpful, you know, we're trying to offer a whole range of support for a whole range of people.
Well, I know the team gets named on the 20th, and they have a mandatory out in a couple of weeks later there, but they actually ship at the end of July, Will, don't they, the horses? And we're talking about the event specifically now, of course. Give us an idea of what the lead up to that means and the quarantine and the other health protocols of going into South America.
Yeah, I suppose the process dates back to November last year when we had to submit a list of all the feeds and supplements and medications that we might want to take to Rio. And they've been presented to MAPA, which is the Agriculture Department of the Ministries in Brazil, and their customs people. And some of those have been approved and some haven't. And we've only just found out which ones have not, which is challenging. The next step in the process was loading everyone's details onto the US Olympic Committee's online registration database. That happened by the end of February. So the process started very early. As you say, selection will take place on or around the 20th. I don't know exactly when the press release will go out. And the horses will ship on the 30th. Our container actually left Gladstone at the end of May. That has a lot of the sort of stable kit on board that container. So that's shipping by sea. As soon as the nominated entry list, which is the kind of long list, if you like, as soon as that's done, we have to go through the process of working out exactly who will be accredited as the groom, as the two owners, as the athlete. We have to do detailed equipment lists that will ship with each horse. Actually, they're supposed to be done by next Monday, but the detailed ones will have to wait a couple of weeks. The detailed feed lists, the supplement lists, then every feed bag and every supplement that goes will have to be marked with a registration number that's been given to us by Rio. The eventing team, as you say, will then all run at the Land Rover Great Meadow International, which is the 8th to the 10th of July at the Plains, which I'd encourage everyone to go and support them. there. It's a great event, and it's the first Eventing Nations Cup team competition outside Europe. So really exciting event there. And the horses fly from Miami on the 30th of July. The majority of the grooms and the riders and the staff will fly just before the horses, so they're actually in Rio when they arrive. The horses fly business class, so a jet stall is what we put the horses in, and then the stall is loaded onto a freight aircraft. You can fit three horses to a jet stall, but we travel two horses to the jet stall, so the horses get to fly business class, and all of their kit and their feed will accompany them, and there'll be some professional grooms and one of our grooms on board that flight. That leaves Miami, lands in Rio, and then the organizing committee have bought some horse boxes over from Europe, from Germany actually, to transport the horses from the airport in Rio to the venue, which we think will be a journey of between half an hour and an hour, depending on traffic. I mean, they'll have an escort, they'll have a police escort, and they'll get into the venue sort of late afternoon on the 30th. Christy Baxter, myself, Leah, and someone we've been working with from Rio will be on the venue from about 5 days before to make sure everything's ready for the arrival of the horses and the grooms. It's quite an involved process and quite a long build-up. Certainly, registering all the feed and the supplements and the medications has been challenging.
We should mention the shipping company that you work with, Will, and how you get the horses from after Great Meadows, then they all go home, how you coordinate then the traveler for them to go down to Miami and the company that you use, because that's an operation in itself, getting everyone down to Miami. That's quite a road trip.
Yeah, it is. And the way we work it is centrally we'll kind of organize from when they depart Miami to everything that happens in Rio. And then each of the team managers, so Joni Morris for Eventing, will organize that pre-departure period, because each team does it slightly differently. So the Eventing team are going to get together in North Florida to do some training prior to travel, and they will then travel as a unit to Miami, and the Duda Corps will be helping us load all the horses onto the planes. All the travel internationally has been arranged by Peden International. But we work very closely with Tim Duda and his company on all the movements we do to Europe and back. So it's a pretty well-oiled machine for riders in America to be moving these long distances. It's possibly something that riders over here are more used to than in Europe, in a way, because Europe's obviously a lot smaller in terms of the distances people travel. So everyone will travel home or to a holding yard after Great Meadow, and then they'll gather 3 or 4 days before flying for 3 days training, and then they'll the horses will travel down to Miami. In fact, the riders, the athletes, and the staff travel via Houston in Texas to go through the U.S. Olympic Committee's team processing, where they get all their team clothing and they do some media work and obviously get to meet other athletes that are going through at the same time. The grooms obviously have to get to Rio as quickly as possible so that they're ahead of the horses. So they'll fly from Miami to Rio, but the riders and some of the team staff will fly to Houston and then from Houston overnight to Rio. So, yeah, it's a lot of travel, and definitely, you know, horses and riders need a little bit of recovery when they get there.
For sure. Talk about the health and quarantine requirements, though, for South America. How has that impacted us relative to other countries?
The work on the health protocols started a number of years ago, really back in 2012. And what has happened is they've created what's called a disease-free zone on the Rio, the Deodoro, which is where our venue is in Rio. The actual venue is classed as a disease-free zone. So effectively, the horses never enter Brazil. They get to the airport, they're offloaded into trucks, the trucks go to the venue, The horses stay at the venue, they get back on the trucks, go to the airport and leave. So that makes the protocols a lot easier. Prior to travel, the horses go through 14 days of veterinary assessment and observation, and there are various blood tests that are done, which is usual for travel. When the horses travel back to the US, they do have to go through 7 days of what's called screwworm quarantine, making sure there's no screwworm larvae on the horses, which is challenging, but that's the requirement of the United States. They don't have to do that going back into Europe. So effectively, because this is such a major event, this is not like flying horses to Brazil normally, which would be very challenging. We're effectively flying them to a protected zone that happens to be within Brazil, is probably the best way of looking at it. And so there's very strict protocols about whether the horses can leave the venue, etc.
All right. Talk about the stabling and how that compares, because, of course, that establishment at the ACWES Olympic Equestrian Venue was first put to use in 2007 for the Pan Ams, of course. So is there any permanent stabling there, Will, or is it all temporary?
Yeah, the venue is actually a mounted cavalry training center. So there are permanent facilities there, including stabling. For those that went to the Pan American Games in 2007, the stabling has been fundamentally changed, and they've also built some new stabling. So the stables are bigger, and the doors now face out instead of into a central aisle, which we think is a lot better. The stables, as I say, are bigger. They've all now got rubber matting. We believe the ventilation will be very good, although we will take a fan for each horse just in case. So all of the facilities are permanent, perhaps with the exception of, you know, some of the cross-country course probably won't get used again. But there's an indoor arena, which was there in 2007. They've built a brand new veterinary clinic, which has very good facilities. So that will be a good legacy for the military and the surrounding equestrian population. The main arena is permanent. The training arenas have all been expanded. I think each of the three main training arenas can take 3 60-by-20 dressage arenas, so that's a lot of space. Add in the indoor arena and a lunging arena, it's plenty of training space. There's an 8-9 furlong ascending brass gallop so that we can give the horses a gallop when we get there. And I guess the only temporary facilities are all the add-on press rooms, dining rooms, you know, accreditation, security, all of that sort of add-on build that happens around a major event. One side of the main arena has a permanent grandstand, and then there will be temporary tribunes around two of the other sides. So, yeah, it's. I think that as long as everything's finished, and we believe it's going to be, it's going to be a fantastic venue. Transport getting there could be challenging for some, but you know, the thing about Olympic Games is every Olympic Games has its challenges, and the teams that get on and deal with the challenges are the teams that are in a position to be able to maximize their performance, and the teams that led all the challenges of an Olympic Games overcome them, and the teams that don't perform.
Well, you have to tell us what the little quirks are of Rio, because I know some of our listeners will be thinking, well, I want to go down there. I know about Zika. I know about the security, maybe transport. But what other little things can you share with us, Will, that they should be aware of before they plan their trip?
Well, Rio, of course, is a challenging city in terms of the topography and the geography, because it's built around mountains. So it's been very difficult for Rio to expand their transport system, and they've done a lot. But people should certainly build in plenty of travel time if they're not on the official transport. We do believe that the official yellow taxis will be able to use some of the priority lanes. So stick to official taxis, not unofficial taxis. There are some very good restaurants in Rio, so plan your dining well. I think the Zika thing has obviously caused a lot of publicity, but we're entering the winter months, and there's no doubt that the Rio Organizing Committee the local government, the World Health Organization, have all been working extremely hard to dramatically reduce the risk. And yes, it's something that people have to be aware of, but I think that there's plenty of information out there, and it is something that is that one can cope with.
And when you're planning the horse clothing is one thing, of course. You can give us an idea of what sort of temperatures the any visitors can expect, and the rainfall. Do you have any idea roughly what to expect, Will?
Yeah, it should not be too humid. That's what we're hoping. It could be into the 80s, but really anything between sort of high 60s and early 80s. Occasional rainfall. It does seem to cover quite a lot of options, but you should definitely plan on bringing rain gear, but also light summer clothing. And yeah, I mean, clearly if there's a mosquito risk, then wearing longer trousers is more suitable than wearing shorts all the time. But I think bring mosquito repellent and bring a good sun hat, because the stands, only one of the stands, grandstands, are covered. So you are going to be sitting out in the sun, in all likelihood. Plan for it being reasonably warm, but it can certainly get chillier at night. So I'm afraid you need to bring a bit of a range of clothing.
All right. Well, the competition, of course, runs through 5th to the 9th of August at the Aquis Olympic Equestrian Venue. And when do the horses actually leave Rio and get home? Will, is it a direct flight back to Miami for them?
Yep, they leave on the 12th. I think it's the 12th, might be 11th. And they fly direct back to Miami from Rio.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very much indeed for coming on the program and sharing your preparation for this year's Olympic Games. We wish, of course, the team the very best of luck. And it will all be down to your planning, Will, right? Getting the horses there safely.
Well, it's down to a lot of people's hard work, not just mine.
All right. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for coming on the program.
Thank you.
And that's our show for this week. Don't forget you can catch up with all the latest news, the leaderboards, and other information on the website at useventing.com, or follow us on social media. Just look for US Eventing Association. This podcast can be downloaded from the iTunes podcast store to any mobile device, so you can listen to the show on the go. Until the next time, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world, and enjoy your eventing.